and I call this the astronomical guide to success or failure, depending on how you look at it. Blind luck, be it good or bad, is Saturn, and your network of influential people is Jupiter. These are the gas giants. Out there in the ink black reaches of space is Pluto. This is what you're good at. These are your intrinsic talents. But it's useless out there in the Kuiper belt. It's pointless. You need to bring it into orbit of blind luck and influential people. That's where it needs to be, because that's where your talent begins to thrive and flourish. But your moment in the sun is dependent on the longevity of those, the applicability of those talents, the longevity and your willingness to learn.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you enjoyed our most recent interviews with Harry Duran of Podcast Junkies and marketer Latisha Stiles. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast today as my guest, Wayne Smallman. Wayne's the owner and founder of Octane Interactive. And with Octane, he helps small businesses handle big business problems with customized cloud software designed to reduce data loss, to reduce errors, and to reduce duplication. Octane also build innovative websites and web applications. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, don't worry, click the blue Take a Peek Inside button and check it out. In our discussion today, Wayne talked to me about getting to the real needs of your customer by asking, what is it that they really provide their customers? We talked about the difference between data and information and how insights are where the real value is. And we talked about the astronomical guide to success, aligning all the planets. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Wayne Smallman. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Barnsley in the UK, Wayne Smallman. Now, Wayne is the owner and founder of Octane Interactive. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Wayne. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest.
I am honoured, pleased, sort of excited. It's an age thing. I tend not to get too excited, but I'm feeling that sort of deep down tingling. I think It is excitement. And so thank you.
Yeah, well, good. So Kieran McKeefrey, who we had on episode 159 of the podcast, suggested that we interview you, Wayne. So a big hello to Kieran.
And now, yes, thank you.
Yeah. Now, Octane Interactive create custom software to manage and share data. They also build innovative websites and web applications. And just before we went live on the recording, we were just having a bit of a chat about outcomes. And to me, that was a nice segue into some marketing conversation that I'd like to have with you. So I'm really looking forward to digging deeper into all those topics today. But before we start talking about all things software and websites and applications and marketing, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
I suppose it started with Lego. I loved Lego when I was a kid. I was forever building things. But at the same time, I was always, much to the disappointment of my dad, I would take a hammer to a toy car, and he thought that was some type of, I was on the sort of psychopathic spectrum or something like that. But really, it was just to figure out what held things together.
Yeah.
So I like building things, I like dismantling things, and in general, figuring out, you know, how these things worked. And it, I think that would have been the synthesis. I always wanted to be the captain of my own ship, I think. And it sort of built from there. I love to learn. I love to invent. I've always been very creative. I was an illustrator in an earlier phase in my life. That's sort of dropped by the wayside. But in general, I love to do creative things. And that is it, at the heart of what I do, I think.
So when did you discover computers and the internet?
Again, at an early age, I think it was probably a friend who had a computer. I loved the idea, again, of creating things, typing these arcane lines of code, and then things, graphics, visuals appearing out. A bit of context, I'm in my 40s now, so this is in the dark days of computing where you didn't have color displays. It was green screen and that type of thing, like out of, you know, war games, you know, the movie from years ago. But still, you know, there was this sort of passion for that type of thing, but I had no focus for it. So my dad, credit to him, he took me to these classes, and unfortunately it was too far ahead for me. I only have a vague recollection of that, but he told me that it was too advanced. And we moved on from that. And it wouldn't be until I was let's think about this now. So it was after college. Yes, this has forced me to dig deep. Mm-hmm. I picked a bit of a crossroads with Optane. It would have been the year after I'd started the business. So this is like year 2000. And I looked at the businesses out there and the needs of the businesses that I would be interacting with. And I had a question, how best to meet those needs? And so it became obvious to me that I would have to learn a programming language. And at that point, the most common languages available would have been ASP, which is Microsoft side of things, and then PHP, which was the open source. Long story short, I went with the PHP thing, and that was perhaps the best thing that I ever did, because that at that point, I was living the dream. I was creating things from scratch. I'm sure there was lots of things out there, you know, code repositories and that type of thing. But this was me starting from scratch, having bought a book from Rocks Publishing, which is dog-eared and is sat in a sort of almost revered place on a shelf somewhere. Best £50 I've ever spent, because it completely transformed a new business. You know, it was almost like a pivotal moment. And everything came out of that, everything, because I started this furious learning experience, made tons of mistakes, produced an enormous amount of crap. But out of it, it allowed me, like I said, to live the dream. I absolutely loved it. And I still love it. I get frustrated with it because I'm less patient now, but still love doing that.
Yeah. So what is it you do today then at Octane Interactive, and why do you do it?
When I first started out, I wanted to do everything. As a 24-year-old, you sort of think that you're invincible, that you are the epicenter of knowledge, and you know, you're almost like you've got this oracle like grasp of everything that's happening in the world. And looking back, naive isn't sufficient a word to describe how little I knew at that point. Yeah. But over time, I had to trim a lot of things out. So this, again, for some of the millennials who are listening, interactive CD-ROMs were a thing. Yes, they were. Interactive CD-ROMs actually were a thing that people asked for and people produced. Idiots like me produced them. They were horrendous things to do. You would come up with this fantastic design with all these fancy buttons, and then the client would come along. This is excellent, but we need it translating into German and Spanish, and think, oh, what? So straight away, Spanish is between 15% and 30% more verbose than German. You know, the That's it. You've got the compound words. The buttons are now running onto three lines. Yeah. Oh, dear me. So anyway, all of that went, got rid of all of that madness. And I trimmed everything down to the occasional bit of print, web design, and then the bespoke web applications. And that's where I funneled everything that I got. And over time, the print is sort of faded a little bit. The websites, that's something that I tend to outsource now because it's been commoditized. Mm. It's not a growth market. So focusing now on what has become cloud applications, I suppose this brings us to the sort of semi intractable problem of how do I explain what it is that I do? So if I meet with people and what I prefer to do is listen to people and hear, because people, you know, if you start with the obvious questions, the sort of what I call lateral conversation, where you don't build up things, it's sort of, hi, how are you? How's the weather? This doesn't build a conversation. The whole thing seems to go sideways. So we just jump straight into it. What are you struggling with? What are your problems? And this is vertical conversations. You're building upon one question with answers and you start to get to the substance of things. And it's out of that then that I wrap the proposition. So at that point, when they turn to me, so tell me then what it is that, you know, what do you do? I'm in a much better position to be able to explain to them what it is there because I've already established what they do. Hmm. If we're coming at it from the other angle, what do you do? Things akin to magic. There's a lot of hand waving. None of it that you would understand. Tons of acronyms. You're going to get bored. Let's start again. It's a horrible experience. So like I said, we're coming from the other angle.
Just before we started recording, you were telling me that you've basically reframed a little bit how you look at this whole idea of what your business is about and what you do and to focus on outcomes, which I think is what you're saying here, that you know, if you understand the need, then you're in a position to say, well, we can give you that outcome with much less pain and more effectively and with some other benefits perhaps. So talk to us a little bit about that because that to me is a really interesting conversation to understand. And you gave two examples there around a florist or somebody that services your car. So if I take my car to service, I'm on the surface, I'm wanting my car serviced, but really what I want is to ensure that my car reliably can get me from A to B whenever I want. So the need is actually at a different level.
It is. That's it. So I tend to labor under the assumption that I can figure everything out for myself. I tend to do a decent job. Gets better with age, but it does involve a bit of slowness to things. But I have these epiphanies, and as I mentioned before, it's an experience that's unique to me. And in this case, realizing that it was as I explained, attempting to come up with a simple explanation of what Octane does and establish the route to market and look comparing the route to market for Octane to other businesses that are out there. And I realized then that a lot of businesses, a lot of small businesses and large businesses, they fit into this, what I call the obvious business, which is they meet with an immediate want or need. So you want a bunch of flowers, you need a mechanic, like you mentioned. And there is nothing that obvious about what Octane does, but that epiphany, when I focused on that, thinking about the want and the need thing, and I, you know, the want is a bar of chocolate, need is breathing. They're not the same thing. Hmm. So that was something else. Things started sort of connecting to each other. I'd understood the difference between want and need. I've got these obvious business classification, but then I took that one step further. Well, you know, if you go to a florist, it's not that you want a bunch of flowers, you need to make someone feel better about themselves. I don't need a mechanic, I need the car fixing, and it's about establishing outcomes. So while a lot of this deep thinking had given me a better insight into businesses in general, but also clients and prospective clients, it wasn't immediately transferable to me. There was, you know, there wasn't a lot of applicability in terms of Octane. But I write this down, you know, and it's something that we'll mention later on. I use some software that I've created myself to I pour everything in there, the discoveries, the thought processes, and I capture all of that. So I've got all of that information there, and then I turn it into articles and videos and that type of thing.
Mm. Well, I think that's a really important point there. And I think back to when I first started my career, I worked in the photographic industry. And one of the things, if you look back on the demise of the classical photographic industry when digital photography came out, it was the Kodaks and the Agfas of the world thought they were in business of manufacturing film, thought they were in the business of giving people film to take pictures, thought they were in the business of giving people paper to enlarge the photographs that they'd taken and hang them on the wall and so on. But what they didn't realize was that chunking up step of what they were really in the business of was creating memories for people about their experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, forgetting that meant that there are all of a sudden people that thought, well, we can create those memories in different ways, and came up with alternative methods to do that, became competition. And they didn't necessarily consider them as competition because they didn't manufacture film or paper. Photographic paper, and to their detriment, they ignored digital photography as competition.
Yes. And the interesting thing is, I remember the first, I don't know whether it was the first commercial digital camera, I'm guessing that it wasn't, but anyway, it was the Apple, I don't remember the name of it now, but it looked like a pair of binoculars. It was a weird little thing. Apple did a deal with Kodak and came up with this digital camera.
Yeah.
And the quality of the photographs was terrible. I mean, these things were tiny, but this was at the forefront of digital photography. But like you said, Kodak, they were cognizant enough to be involved in the digital photography area. In fact, they established umpteen patents in that area, but for some reason, you know, as you mentioned there, they forgot what it is that they did and didn't fail to identify competition. That in itself is a lesson for everyone. That is the type of transferable experience. You know, you look at something like that and think, wow, that could happen to me. If you break it down to abstract terms, forget about the fact that it's Kodak, this huge organization.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's
someone else could easily come along and steal your lunch.
That's right. That's one that I've lived through because I'm a keen photographer and got a job in photographic research very early on in my career. And right about the same time, digital photography became available for, you know, the commercial market. And like you say, the experience was, let's get a look at this thing and that's rubbish. The quality of the photos is rubbish. And they didn't do anything about it. And so I quickly recognized that this wasn't going anywhere and moved on. But there's many examples of that. I mean, if you look at things like Uber and Airbnb, you know, their business models, they've come in and decided, well, people don't need a taxi, they need transport from one place to the other, and there's other ways to do it. And people don't need a hotel, they need accommodation when they're traveling, and there's other ways to do it. So all of a sudden, the business model changes, and when something like that changes the business model, then there's a really rapid pace of change across that whole industry, and people don't realize it. So it's good to reflect on that and look at that. Yeah,
it's what you take from these experiences. The failures, I find, far more informative than the successes. Sometimes the success, this is something that I've reflected on before, success sometimes isn't so much about what you're good at, it's about who, your proximity to influential people and blind luck. And if you gain success from those, that's great, more power to you, but you don't learn anything from it because it's not replicable as such. It's not something, it's almost like word of mouth marketing. You don't get to document that. You don't get to transcribe that experience. It's something that almost falls into your lap. Whereas discovering success, getting there, almost like the Thomas Edison approach to it, where I haven't failed, I've found 10,000 ways of not doing it or whatever, that type of thing, that is far more beneficial because, you know, there's people out there on the talking circuit talking about how they spent 20 years being a complete failure and yet they're getting paid $5,000 a shot to talk to people. So, you know, there's value in the most politicians, in fact, think that's what happens in the twilight years. The writer of the autobiography.
It's always good if you can work out learnings for your own situation from mistakes that other people have made. That's a good way to shortcut things, I believe. So
yes,
it's always worth looking at. All right. Now, you mentioned cloud software, cloud computing before. So talk to us about that. What specifically do you understand as cloud computing and cloud software? Because it's, to me, it's a, I mean, I have a vision of what that term means, but I've seen it applied to so many different situations where I thought, oh, that's kind of stretching that definition beyond what I thought it was.
I'm probably going to agree with you there because this is one of the interesting things about how, you know, how I do things. and it always makes people chuckle. I focus more on what the needs of the client are. So people, I see people or hear people talking about the competition. I could not care less about the competition. They're not relevant to me. Mm. I don't care about what technologies they're using. I don't care about the clients. Why should I care about the technologies and their clients? If I do that, all I'm doing is chasing around after a bunch of companies who are in turn chasing about after another bunch of companies, and none of that is relevant to me. I'm not the one who's been hired or tasked to meet those needs. So it's not relevant. My clients are the most immediate need.
Yeah.
And that's
I heard somebody say once, I'm not fussed about the competition because they don't pay my wages, they don't pay my bills, it's the customer.
That's it.
Yeah.
So an inevitable consequence, at least for me, is that I get my head down and I tend not to look over the parapet as often as I should. Because what I've learned is I should at least look at the competition once in a while to figure out what range of technologies they're using for, because obviously I'm a technology business. I need to know what the best technologies are to do whatever I need to do. So that, you know, there's a lesson there that on occasion I do need to get my head up and have a look around. But in terms of the competition, what they're doing, I don't really care. So out of that, I tend to get on with things and start building things for clients. And then someone will come along and say, wow, yeah, that's this particular thing, is it? All right, well, I've read about that, but I didn't know that what I was doing was that. And cloud software was one of them. I've been doing it since 2000. And someone mentioned, so you do cloud software. And I had to sort of pause for a moment because, in all honesty, I didn't know if it was. I didn't know. I thought cloud software was the likes of SAP and Microsoft and that type of thing. Mm. But as it turns out, that's what I've been doing for almost 2 decades. I've been developing cloud software. This is a piece of software that sits on a server. That is, in essence, the definition. So thinking about then what is the type of software that I create for clients. The companies that I'm more interested in are those that are sort of bouncing along. They can see the, if you think of like businesses along a performance curve, they're sort of bouncing along the runway and the bottom of the performance curve is there in the distance. And that's the area that I want to get involved. I don't want to be at the top. I've been involved with blue chip businesses And once you get to the top, they begin to plateau. The gaining 0.001% growth costs billions. It's ridiculous. It's a Herculean effort. There's politics. It's madness. And a lot of the time, the people at the top that you're dealing with, I'm painting a terrible picture of these. This is my own experiences. The people at the top are almost like capricious gods. They love you one moment and then strike you down with a thunderbolt the next. I don't need to be navigating that nonsense. I much prefer to do things on a smaller scale where, you know, every day we can create some gain. We can move the gain line forward. And so that's where I want to be. So most of these businesses, they've got things spread about on Excel files, some boutique content management system, pieces of paper. Things are scattered all over the place. Some of it digitized, some not. And that's where the problems start. So another epiphany that I had was with a new client then about 7 years ago. And she was at a wit's end. She was having major problems meeting the immediate needs of a client at that time. And it was, for her, it was almost an intractable problem. It was a two-month period. It was an intense period. And there was lots of... this is the moment, the epiphany. When I'm looking around at the sort of everything going on, there was data loss, error, and duplication. And I thought, that's it. So in terms of this workflow, that's it. And that's it more or less for everyone. It's data loss, error, and duplication. So what I need to do is take all of this, which is a workflow made up of people processes, and turn them into digital processes. I'm not going to make all of these problems with the data magically disappear, but I'm going to mitigate against most of them. And we're going to dampen things down. So there's a lot of initial firefighting. But out of that, in fact, a business came out of it. The client spun out a separate business. And now that business is worth millions. Mm-hmm. Out of that initial firefighting exercise, where we came up with within the first, I think, 6 months, we created a working prototype. I think the phrase is a minimum viable product. And then we've built on top of that. And that was about 2006, 2007 or something like that. And, you know, I'm still working on that now. So that in essence is it. It's about taking a workflow. It's a bit of a monster spread out over different things. And if it's 10 processes, we get the thing down to 5 or 3. If there's 5 stakeholders, we get it down to 1 or 2. And that's a place I love to be, working with the people at the top and the people at the coalface, and coming up with something that meets everyone's needs, because it's all about what they need to do. It's not about what I'm good at or what technology is available. That's secondary. All those things are tools that I use to underpin, to undergird their needs, and to get them moving as fast as possible with as less waste and error as possible.
Yeah. So certainly you're, you know, very outcome focused there. And I think one of the beauties of the cloud, if you like, is the ability to streamline processes and bring data together, and particularly to work on one set of data. One of the things that I found in the early days of computers, when everybody got really excited and, oh, I can digitize all this information, and then the moment multiple people had to access that information, all of a sudden you had all these different versions and, oh, you're not working on the latest version, you know, but I've edited this one as well. So now you've got two parallel streams going down, and the information, it's as if it's two separate bits of information. So that's where I see the magic of the cloud, really. So it sounds like they're the sort of applications that you put together for specialty needs.
Yes, it's and every one of them is different. It's also understanding that the application is a living thing. There isn't at no point is it finished. Mm. All you're doing is finishing one particular phase of the development, then moving on to the next, and then the next, and then the next, and the whole thing evolves. It's an animal. It's a living thing. So An example there. I don't like dead ends within applications. So, if you're going to do something, if you've got a particular task, if you need to bring together something, then let's do something with that bunch of data and information. There's a hierarchy to things, which I just touch on. Data, information, and knowledge are not the same thing. Much the same as want and need. Data is to DNA what information is to the human. What knowledge is to civilization. There's a hierarchical structure to them. And so while the application contains data, what the client is doing with that data creates information. And then over time, once you've got enough information in there, we're able to create a series of dashboards which empowers them to do other things with that information and combine it, then you begin to magically, knowledge begins to emerge. So one example was a request to come up with an advanced search feature. And I thought, well, this is great, but all we're doing is generating a page full of search results. That's crap. There's no real value to it. So I had to ask the client, what do you want to do with this, or what do you need to do with it? So once we had that conversation, it became obvious that the client was then using those search results to begin a conversation with their client and to talk about those particular things. I don't want to go into the ins and outs because it's, for privacy purposes. But that allowed them to have a conversation which otherwise they wouldn't have, because as it happened, their client, my client's client, didn't have access to this information. So I said, all right, let's think about this then. Let's have an advanced feature, but let's also incorporate other financial information in there. So let's turn this into a spreadsheet. So at the end of it, it calculates across the horizontal and then down in the vertical like an invoice. So you've got sales information in there. And then once you've got that, let's allow you to export it as a spreadsheet. Once we did that, the client was able to monetize those spreadsheets and charge four-figure sums for them, because that was data that as I mentioned, their client didn't have, and it became data. It became a legitimate service that they were able to provide. It was performance analytics.
Yeah.
Again, a phrase that I'd never heard of, and I've somehow did it all, by sort of happy accident.
I think what you've touched on there, if I understood that right, is you start with data. Raw data, and then you can turn that into information by organizing it and presenting it in various ways. But then taking it into another level is, what insights and learnings do you get from that data? And if you can have software or services that present that data in a way that you gain those insights, then it has huge value.
It does. It does, and this is the amazing thing. I mean, a lot of it, I'm looking at it, and I'll be honest, sometimes I don't understand what's going on. I'm looking at the software and thinking, wow, this is, I know for a fact that they're getting great results out of this. I'm sure that it's having an effect on the bottom line, but I haven't got a clue what's going on. Yeah. I've developed the thing, and I sometimes don't really know what's going on in there. I'm just the architect. I'm the engineer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of being the architect and engineer, you're working, or you have actually got a minimal viable product out there of something you've designed and engineered called UnderCloud. So tell us a little bit about that. What's that all about, and what was the objective behind that, and where can people take a look at it?
I've been accused of entrepreneurialism. and I don't think of myself as an entrepreneur at all. When I think of entrepreneurs, I think of people who they look for ideas, get them up and running as quickly as possible, and then sell them to the highest bidder. And that's not me. That's not my approach. The one thing that I do have in common with entrepreneurs is that in some instances, the ones that I have a strong affinity with, their ideas are born not out of tabulating spreadsheets and looking for niche markets, but out of frustration. Something frustrated the heck out of them. And they thought, well, this is insane. There's got to be someone out there doing this. So they spend 3 months searching around, scrabbling around, looking for the thing that's going to fix the problem that they've got. And it doesn't exist. So they roll the sleeves up. You know what? We get on with it. Let's do it ourselves. So that was the same thing for me. Years ago, when things, again, if the, you know, we've got millennials listening, there was some software called Delicious, which was a bookmarking service. I hated it, and it was the most popular one out there. It was horrendous. It made no sense to me whatsoever. And I thought, there's got to be something better than this, because I was reading things, and I would read one thing, and then the next day I would read something else and think, but those two things are connected. I need to connect them. I need to establish a connection between these two things. I need to create this narrative. This discovery process needs to be a narrative. There's value in connecting these things and creating something, not these discrete individual articles, but a narrative where we move from one thing to another. Sometimes they're not related, but that's not relevant. The relevance and the context is particular to me. So again, long story short, there wasn't anything out there, nothing that I was aware of. So I created my own version. The first version was a dog with a bullet in it. It was horrible. it was such an embarrassment. I abandoned the thing for about 18 months. And it wasn't until a Canadian friend who had roped into testing and using this initial version, she was bugging me for a while because she'd started astronomy and astrophysics at a Canadian university, and this would be really, really useful. I thought it'd be useful if it worked, but at the moment, in its present incarnation, it's a mess. So I thought, all right, let's get this going. And as it happened, the client that I mentioned earlier with the with a problem, we were moving from version one of their software to version two. And I was moving over to an updated version of a particular framework. So this framework is the mechanics of cloud software, if you like. And I think they're an Australian company, Ellis Labs. I think they're an Australian company. So this was CodeIgniter. This was the name of the framework. And I thought, all right, so if we're going to use this next version, I've got an idea. If I need to come up with build the sort of foundations for this version two of the software for the client, why don't I use that exercise to build the underlying framework for the underclient? I explained this to the client, told them that, look, this is going to take a little bit longer to do, but I'll absorb the research and development cost of that. You won't have to pay for that at all, because the client loved that, because that offset the best part of $3,000. But I didn't care, because I thought, I need to learn this type of thing anyway. So something worth mentioning is, and I'm actually going to do a video about this either today or tomorrow, the ethics of business. When it comes to research and development, if the research and development is specific to the client and they get charged for it, if it's something that's transferable to other people, then I won't do that. It wouldn't be fair or ethical to charge a client for work that I'm able to monetize through other people. So that to me, that was obvious. I couldn't do that. So out of this exercise, the undercloud was the version two of undercloud was born, and everything great and amazing came from there. So what is the undercloud? Think of it. It's best again to describe the use cases. So imagine you sat in front of your computer and you've written a note, and you think that's excellent, right? So you just get out of your chair. You think, oh, hold on a second. Sit down again, right? Complete the note, and then you go into the kitchen. You're making a coffee for yourself. Ah, hold on. Yep, thought of something else. Dash into the office. Write something down. Everything is good. 2 weeks. You're bombing down the autobahn, motorway, freeway, whatever, and an idea comes to you. Ah, right, oh yes. So hold on. Now, what do I do with this? Because it's 2 weeks later. Do I put this into that original note, or do I create a second note? But if I create a second note, do I call that part two? But no, this is different. And you're stuck thinking about the how and not doing the what. Mm. And we do that all the time. We get stuck thinking about the organization of how we do the note thing instead of, you know, the creation process, transcribing things. What the undercloud does, it doesn't care. You can create your notes and store them wherever and however you want in different folders. But there's a different layer of organization. And it is literally clicking into a text field, you type the name of the note or the whatever asset it is that you need to connect. Clicking it, add a message, a description, and you've connected those two notes together. So another talking about the context, the next use case, and it brings us back to the original description, the pain point. Imagine you've written a note about all things apples, apple strudel, apple cider, apple sauce, apple computer, and then a week later you find a web page about oranges. So this is orange squash, orange marmalade, orange telecom, orange politicians, the list goes on. And you think, well, there's a connection between these two. There's an obvious connection. So at this point, you grab the web page and save it. And this is no different to Evernote. Evernote allows you to create notes and grab web pages. But since you are now able to connect the web page about oranges to the note that you've created about apples, that one word description for the connection is fruit. That's it. That's all it needs to be. You've established the essential essence, the context that binds those two things together and makes them relevant to you. And it could be almost anything. But what you're now able to do is create things for yourself, surround it with research, the things that you find on the web or in emails that are sent to you, because you can forward emails into the system. And at this point, you're doing research, but you don't realize that you're doing it. And you're doing it in the most sensible, the most intuitive way of doing it. And I know it sounds boastful, but I have enough people that every time I show people this, they sit down and their eyes light up when I show the connection process. And the first thing that they say is, so it's like how your mind works. Yep, that's it. That's exactly how your brain works. Your brain makes these novel connections all of the time, but there's no software out there that does this for some reason. And that's honestly, that is it. It is. So again, I created this and someone said, oh, it's a content management system. I suppose it is, but that's not how I started it. I didn't think of a genre. I don't think of what it should be in terms of a name or a description. I think about what it needs to be in terms of meeting those needs. So I use the undercloud all the time, and it's still to me only a beta version, but I absolutely love it. And that is where a lot of my passion is. But I've got to get money from somewhere. I've got to get finance to finance the development, and that's where Octane comes in.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll have a link to the undercloud there, and people can go and have a look at it and see what value it is. Maybe you'll get some other interesting ideas with people coming back, because I looked at it and I thought there's a whole lot of things you could possibly do with this, but I haven't yet played in depth with it, so that's something for me to do.
Well, a friend did genealogy. Mm-hmm. So the Canadian friend, she was having problems with something. She allowed me to go in there and poke around, and she created her entire family tree. Out of the basic folder file structure, so parents in one folder and then grandparents in another, that type of thing. But using this linking thing, she was able to link from one cousin to a distant cousin and explain, for instance, they have the same name or they were born in the same town and that type of thing. And when I realized what she'd done, I had never for a second imagined using it for genealogical purposes, but there you are. So it shows how adaptable it is. It was a profound moment, actually, I'll be honest, realizing that it could be co-opted into doing something as specific as that. It was magical.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm just bearing the time in mind, and I think it's, you know, we've had a really fascinating discussion about cloud software and about needs and wants and getting to some real core needs and making sure that you're addressing those. But I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully we'll get a really short, sharp answer from you that'll inspire people to go away and do something awesome today. So number one, what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
surround yourself with innovative people. I think that's the main. That would be the go-to advice there, because sometimes you get stuck in your own echo chamber. I'm sure Steve Jobs, I'm sure Picasso and other people had moments where they've been sat in the studio, they had the feeling they were losing their minds and got out there. If it involved walking around town. Sometimes, you know, the saying about from the mouths of babes?
Yeah.
Inspiration can come from all sources. And surround yourself with inspirational and innovative people. That's what I do, and that works for me.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's great advice. And like you said, it does help to get you out of your bubble and perhaps looking at things in a different perspective. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
You know, I've got a huge list of things that I would love to do if I had the time to do it. And again, most of that's been poured into the Undercloud, which itself has a list of additional ideas and things that I want to do with it. I do creative writing. There's the Octane itself, and this the various things that I want to do there. Through Mark Asquith, for example, the colleague of Kieran, he's keen to get me into podcasting, and I'm toying with ideas there. So it's sort of an embarrassment of options, but it's the time. It's getting the time to do these things. And there's got to be – the unfortunate thing is, while innovation is by and large, it's a creative strand that you pluck once in a while. It's got to have an immediate cost benefit. In a business context, for small businesses, you don't have the pure research capacity of bigger organizations. That tends to either eat into client time or your own personal time. So you've got to think, all right, I like this. Am I going to stick this out? Am I going to invest enough time in this to get proficient at it? And if I do, how do I monetize it? And I'm saying that's my approach. I'm not going to say, look, this is how you've got to be about this. I'm not going to be prescriptive. Mm. Other people could have different approaches, but from my own experience, there's got to be. It's like that Lego moment. I'm a child again, playing with the Lego, and I've created something great, and I think, wow, yeah, but oh, hang on. And then all of a sudden, I'm an adult again, and is this going to work?
Yeah,
can I monetize the Lego tower? That's, you know, it's that type of thing.
Mm. All right. So, yeah. So the idea of the minimum viable product is really important in that context, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. All right. So, what's the one resource you use the most often?
My own imagination. let me amend that.
That is a good answer.
I suppose imagination. I love to learn. I read tons. But as I mentioned before, I like to figure things out for myself. So I much prefer to struggle. Sounds like a strong word, but I like to toil and ruminate with particular problems. And then once I've come to my own conclusions, then I go out there and see what other people are doing and what they're thinking. I don't like the idea of skipping to the end because, as I mentioned before, you sort of the journey part of it. There's always a journey. The journey is often as important, if not more important, than the arrival. I think that's an Irish proverb, in fact. So that's where I like to be.
Lots of experimentation then.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
A project on track. This sounds like a total cop-out and saying, well, software. And I suppose it is, but it's about finding the best fit. So for me, for example, we use Trello for the overall management of tasks, and I've split it up into I can't remember the name of the we've got to do, doing, and done. That's it. There's a bunch of other ones on the far right hand side, but that in essence is it: to do, doing, and done. For the communication side of things, we use Slack. Slack is, I have a weird relationship with that. The problem with Slack is, if when things when you get into your flow of a conversation, that's when it's at its worst, because the whole thing, everything gets buried, and you've got to return to it and figure out what were you talking about, and when and where. You've got to pull out salient bits of information. You've got to curate that afterwards and do something sensible with it. And it's a total mess. And if it's in one particular channel and there's a bunch of other people talking, it's horrible. So what we try to do within the team that we've got is, if, for instance, we're asking a specific question, then the response is one of those conversation thread things. So we start a conversation, it spins off, and in that gets sat somewhere, and the whole thing is then compartmentalized. And so that when we return to that conversation, assuming any of us remember what that conversation was, we know where to look, and it is in that particular conversation thread object. So it requires a bit of discipline, but the thing is, that's life. You know, you look at some of the software that's out there, and Kanban boards, which is what Trello does. If you don't use a bit of discipline, the whole thing's a chaotic mess. Discipline underpins everything that you do. If you've not got discipline, then go home, be a politician.
Yeah, well, not sure that's so desirable, but anyway. Okay, well, so Trello is great for tasks and projects, and Slack is a really good communication tool. But as you say, there is a little knack to keeping it organized, particularly as the team gets bigger. So finally, then, in the buzz round, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Good question. And I think that starts with a very honest conversation with yourself about yourself. I suppose at some point you've got to look at what other people, this is where you've got to lift your head above the parapets. You've got to look not so much at the businesses, you get fine grain, you get down into the individuals. It's not always a bad thing to have other people out there that are similar to you. If they're successful, then that's a blueprint. You know, you can sort of look at that and think, this is replicable. This is me. I'm not faking it. So that's how they succeeded. Let's see if I can make it work. But you've got to think about what it is. So the example that I mentioned earlier about and I call this the astronomical guide to success or failure, depending on how you look at it. Blind luck, be it good or bad, is Saturn, and your network of influential people is Jupiter. These are the gas giants. Out there in the ink black reaches of space is Pluto. This is what you're good at. These are your intrinsic talents. But it's useless out there in the Kuiper belt. It's pointless. You need to bring it into orbit of blind luck and influential people. That's where it needs to be, because that's where your talent begins to thrive and flourish. But your moment in the sun is dependent on the longevity of the applicability of those talents, the longevity and your willingness to learn. And I think those are core features. Thinking about myself, I like to think that I'm good at stepping outside of myself and looking at myself from an objective perspective. And you learn a lot from that. Sometimes you don't want it. I've said before, people love objectivity when it's in their favor.
Yeah.
And it's true. People love it when you're agreeing with them in an argument. But then at the moment you say, oh, sorry, but I've got to agree with that. Oh, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you get that type of thing.
That's right, yeah.
You've got to do that with yourself. You've got to intercept yourself at that moment and think, no, hold on. You've got to be objective. Take on board that criticism. Where did it come from? And as I said, you've got to have that honest conversation with yourself. You've got to get down into the things that you think are strengths, sometimes are weaknesses, where your vulnerabilities are. That's what I do. And it's a cyclical process. It's not something that I did last week and that's it. It's done. I'm great.
Yeah.
It's something I go through cycles.
So there's a fair bit of self-awareness. And I've never heard self-awareness explained in terms of the planets and orbits. So very unique. All right. Well,
I'm an abstract thinker. if I come across things, I break them down into these abstract analogies that make the most immediate sense. And once you do that, you find that it becomes transferable into other things, like I said, with the want need thing. And that's as much as possible. It's breaking down the silos of experience and making them looking for the immediately transferable experiences and making them work for the living. That's the thing. Your experiences have got to earn the keep or the points.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Wayne. This has been really terrific. I've enjoyed this. Where can people reach out and get in touch or check out your other work?
I think through LinkedIn will probably be the best place. Twitter, I tend to not rant, but it's me sort of, I'm opinionated. So that's probably an understatement. But I think LinkedIn, if you want the more professional Wayne Smallman, that's the best place to be, I think.
All right. And so finally, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
A leader in their field. This is also another excellent question. It's the number one piece of advice. Be brave. Sometimes you don't feel it. Sometimes your sort of self-confidence was there a minute ago and then someone said something horrible about you. It was a disposable comment and you are demolished. But you've got to rebuild yourself in 30 seconds. And somehow you've got to keep renewing yourself, almost like the proverbial phoenix. How brave you are is a defining characteristic. It's not the defining characteristic, but it's something to have in your arsenal, I think.
And that fits well with what you've been talking about before, about conducting lots of experiments, learning by actually having the courage to fail and then learning from those mistakes, which really is just feedback. But then,
yes,
and also the self-awareness part. All right, then finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Do you know, I've not given much thought to this. It's possible that you've already done either one of these two people. I'm guessing you've done Mark before Mark Asquith. If not,
we have had Mark on.
Yeah, so Jessica Kupferman, she's unfortunately, we're very similar. And that's where the problems start. She seems to sort of evoke my mother in me. And you can't imagine. I don't want you to imagine. I encourage you not to imagine it's turmoil. But it's funny, and she's also the thing is she's a comedian, and she's also very self aware and self deprecating, and it is such. I think most comedians are like that anyway. You know, they're great observers, and they're also able to sort of see the silliness in themselves. So Jess will be there.
Okay, we might get an introduction from you. I actually am on her mailing list, and I get sort of regular emails from her about, is she part of the podcast websites?
She's part of the sprawling nebulous network of companies that are sort of springing up around the podcasting, podcast websites. I think it's now Rebel Based Media.
That's right, yeah. So I do get regular emails from her, so I might touch base with her, but an introduction would be lovely too, so we'll get her on the podcast. And it's interesting, there's quite a lot of business owners or entrepreneurs in this space that are going into comedy. Fascinating.
Yeah. He's probably driving them to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a question to ask her then when she's on the podcast. Okay. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Wayne. I've really enjoyed this, and there's been lots of really good learnings in this that I'm sure the audience will be very grateful for as well. So I wish you all the best, and let's keep in touch.
It's been a privilege. I've enjoyed it, and I'm honoured to get, first of all, get recommended by Kieran and then get the chance to do this. It's been my first chance to do something like this, so I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. All right. Well, thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Wayne, and like me, found a lot of really valuable information in what he shared. There are a lot of insights in this interview. Some of the highlights for me were digging deep to understand real customer needs and the idea of discovery by experience, as well as learning from others. I'd love to know what you took away from Wayne's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Wayne Smallman. That is WaneSmallman, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Wayne Smallman. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Wayne there, as well as links to the Octane Interactive website, the Undercloud, and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation. Wayne suggested we interview Jessica Kupfermann, Head of Marketing at Rebel Base Media, and Adam Farah, CTO at Lovepenny, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Jessica and Adam, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the podcast, courtesy of Wayne Smallman. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access your transformational marketing hub and all the free and exceptionally useful information that's there to help you transform your marketing. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.